Stay tuned for an edition of House Call recorded November 12, 2019, as guest host C.J. Morrison speaks with Paula Phelps, director of ISU's Physician Assistant Program and certified lifestyle medicine professional, to discuss lifestyle medicine, what is it, and why is it important.
All content in this program is for informational purposes only and is not intended to be medical advice. Information in this program should not be used in a medical emergency or for the diagnosis or treatment of any medical condition. Please consult your doctor or medical provider if you have any questions about any medical conditions or before taking any drugs, changing your diet, or commencing or discontinuing any course of treatment.
Doctor, my eyes, tell me what is wrong. Was I unwise?
Good morning, and welcome to House Call. I'm your guest host, C.J. Morrison, from KISU-FM on the campus of Idaho State University. And in the studio, we have Paula Phelps. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Now, Paula, you're the director of ISU's Physician Assistant Program. You are a physician assistant yourself, and you're here today to talk about lifestyle medicine. But first, can you tell us a little bit about your background?
Yes, my background is that I'm a physician assistant. I've been a PA for 25 years. I graduated from the University of Utah and was the first faculty hire for the new PA program in 1995 at Idaho State. During this time, I have worked as a faculty member full-time as well as a clinician full-time. And so I teach, I'm an administrator, and then I see patients one day a week.
You're not just a paper pusher.
Well, unfortunately, I actually tend to put fires out, and sometimes that requires pushing papers on top of them. But no, I'm not just a paper pusher, no.
You're out in the field and working with patients.
Absolutely. I love patients. I've always taught my students that it's an honor and a privilege to take care of patients. And all the faculty at ISU-PA program are clinically active.
Awesome. And you are here to talk today about lifestyle medicine, which I have to admit is a new term to me. It almost sounds like a buzz phrase or something. What is lifestyle medicine?
Lifestyle medicine is a new field of medicine. Physicians and other providers can get certified in it and can get actually board certified in it. And it's really about common sense living with science to back it up. So kind of like what your grandma always told you you should do, and now they have all these research studies that actually show that, yeah, that's what you should do. But that's the simple way to say it. A formal way that the American College of Lifestyle Medicine says it is the use of lifestyle medicine in the treatment and management of disease, and that it's not only just for prevention, but we can look at the six pillars of lifestyle medicine and see that it actually treats disease as well.
So when you say stuff your grandma told you, we're not talking old wives' tales like don't go swimming for 30 minutes, but eat right, get enough sleep, exercise.
Pretty much. There's six pillars, and that's three of them right there.
Hey,
good job. So it's healthful eating, physical activity, manage your stress, have good relationships, sleep well, and don't use tobacco or other risky substances. And believe it or not, that's what causes 80% of the chronic diseases we see in this country are those things, or actually lack of those things.
What kind of substances?
So the number one is tobacco, absolutely. And so any tobacco is harmful for you, any tobacco in the form of vaping, cigarettes, chewing tobacco, my husband's favorite, cigars. Sorry, Tad, but yes, he does still smoke cigars even though he's married to me. And then also looking at alcohol. I love wine, but I really try to hold myself to the guidelines for what's healthy, which is for women, it's one drink a night, up to seven drinks in a week, and you should never have more than three. So that's about monitoring how much we're doing of something that could be risky. So drinking alcohol, that would the what I just described is really about moderate drinking, which is relatively safe for your health.
Guidelines are different for men.
They are different. In general, men are larger and have more body mass and muscle mass than we do. They get to double their amount of alcohol.
Oh.
So for them, maintaining healthy drinking would be drinking no more than 2 drinks per night and no more than 14 drinks in a week.
I had no idea about that.
I know. We can't really keep up with them. We shouldn't anyways.
You've mentioned that there are 6 pillars. With the limited amount of time we've got, is there one on which you'd like to focus?
I really wanted to talk about healthful eating and nutrition. I know that this is most likely going to air on Thanksgiving, and so
yes,
it's
ma'am.
A good time to talk about healthful eating as we get into the holidays. And so what's really – first I want to talk about is my journey with this. I eat healthfully, and I have for many years, but about 2 years ago, my life changed. I was at a conference, and there was one specific slide at this medical conference that made me think, wow, I could be living better. And that slide demonstrated on one axis, it showed all the chronic diseases that we're scared of, cardiovascular disease, stroke, hypertension, cancers, all of these things. And on the other axis was how much we eat of vegetables. And it went from vegan diet, then vegetarian diet, then a pescatarian diet, then chicken, and then meat, and then standard American diet. And the incidence of all those nasty diseases went up as we ate more red meat, and it went down as we consumed more vegetables. And I thought, I know I can do this better. And so my journey started in April 2018 when I decided that I really wanted to become a vegetarian, which is a little bit difficult because my husband's an avid hunter. And so there's always fresh elk, pheasant, whatever is around. And so changing that is a little bit of is a tough thing for me. But I did, and one of the things that helped me the most was last Thanksgiving. I was in Ireland visiting my daughter. She was doing a study abroad there, and she's vegetarian. Her fiance is vegan. And when I had a completely vegetarian Thanksgiving in Ireland, I thought, you know what? This is really good, and I think I could go without the turkey next year. So this year, no turkey at our house.
A tofurkey?
Nope, no tofurkey either. We actually are going to have vegan options, and then the only meat that we're offering at our house is going to be elk. And so it'll be a very healthy, low-fat, non-processed, and non-commercially available.
That was respectfully and responsibly harvested.
That was respectfully harvested. Yep.
I am a meat eater, and I remember I had a vegetarian over on one Thanksgiving, and even making the gravy, I was like, I don't know what to do. We had lots of mashed potatoes, though, and squash and things like that. So it is a big change. And I try to find myself eating more vegetables. Now I tried zoodles for the first time, and I like them better. I'm worried about the carbs in pasta more than anything else, but they were better than pasta. And I realized with all the vegetables I've loaded on this, I'm pretty much eating vegetarian. There was a little cheese, but
that's
it was good.
Great. Everything we can do to move our diets more towards mostly plant-based is healthier for us.
Can I ask you a question?
Absolutely.
How important in the whole vegetable thing is organic versus non-organic?
I have found that some organic things taste better. And otherwise, I just do my best to eat the healthiest that I can. I've actually seen a study, and it wasn't organic versus non-organic. It was about fresh produce in the grocery versus frozen produce. And what the study was saying is that usually getting our food to market, things are harvested when they're not quite ripe, and there's greater nutrition in the things that are in the freezer than things that are in your normal market that were picked before they were ripe. And the very best things that you can eat are the ones that are more available to you locally because they were harvested when they were ready to be harvested. So that's really more about getting food as it is intended to be harvested and not about whether or not it has pesticides and those things. Everything being wonderfully perfect, yes, organic would be better, but I would say focus on the nutrition and really focus on getting 5 to 7 vegetables and fruits a day.
That is a big task for a lot of folks.
Mm-hmm.
Unless, I mean, even things like V8, which has a lot of vegetables in it, the sodium kind of, it feels like it counteracts the nutritional value.
Sodium is difficult for many people. Worldwide, sodium is one of the leading causes of different types of death that we have worldwide. So any way that we can cut sodium out is healthy. That being said, I don't have a sodium problem. I don't have hypertension. And I often, when I make my vegan vegetable-based soups, will add a little V8 to it because of the flavor, probably the sodium. But anyways, I typically use the low-sodium vegetable stock, but then we'll add some V8 at the end. So I think all things in moderation, that goes back to our wine discussion. But anyways, all things in moderation. My biggest take-home message is that vegetarian diets are associated with lower all-cause mortality and are both preventative and also treatment of disease. And by all-cause mortality, what I mean is those major killers, heart disease, stroke, and cancers.
So people don't necessarily have to go all vegetarian, but much more, maybe save meat for a day or two a week? Would that even be better than not?
That would be huge. Before I became vegetarian, I was eating meat twice a day. I typically would have meat in my my lunch and like a sandwich, and then I'd usually have meat as the part of my main course at dinner. And so going to now, I have elk maybe twice a month, and maybe I'll have fish once a month. That's been a huge change. Some people talk about using meat as a condiment, but again, if you think about how any way we can get towards more vegetable-based is healthier. And a huge thing also is processed food. There's very unhealthy vegetarian and vegan diets because they're relying on things out of a box that are full of other things we don't want to eat, sodium you've already mentioned, and they're processed. I looked at one study. It was a 2019 study by Hall, and it was a randomized controlled trial of processed versus unprocessed eating. And what they did is they took 20 people, 10 men, 10 women, and they had them in an inpatient setting. So they couldn't play with their kids at home. They didn't have any distractions. And for 28 days, they were in this inpatient setting, and their food consumption was completely controlled. And for the first 14 days, they had they could eat all they wanted, only 3 times a day, but at those 3 meals, all they wanted to eat of ultra-processed diet. And the other group was eating all they could eat of unprocessed diet. And they looked at given people could eat total amounts and everything, but at the end, the body weight changes were highly correlated with diet differences. So people who were eating the ultra-processed diet gained weight, and people who were eating the unprocessed food lost weight. And so again, just because we choose to be vegetarian or vegan, we really need to look at what we're eating and not pull stuff off the shelves.
Whole grains versus white bread, for example.
Correct. Whole grains are less processed. So if you think about eating something that looks like it grew out of the earth, an avocado is not processed at all. And guacamole, which you make in your kitchen, is minimally processed. And then if you bought something out of the, I don't know what section, commercially available guacamole that was had chemicals in it, then that would be ultra processed. But the bread, using white bread, they've taken everything good out of that and left the fluffy flour that makes us fluffy.
And the hard thing, I think, for consumers, especially those with families, is that vegetables cost more than mac and cheese. Or fast food. Dave's Killer Bread costs 3 times the amount of a loaf of White Wonder Bread. The stuff that's good or best for us is cost prohibitive. I think that's a struggle for a lot of families. Do you have any suggestions?
I would say look at the frozen foods. Not the canned, because they are full of the sodium again. But looking at the frozen food, you can often find frozen vegetables on sale. They're often less expensive than some of the fresh. And they, according to the studies that I've seen, might even have more nutritional value because they were harvested when they needed to be harvested and not to try to get them to market 3 weeks later.
So second best to, say, farmers market veggies.
Correct. And if families are trying to plan ahead, thinking about how can I have a garden next summer, and doing that is also save considerable amount of money.
I'm CJ Morrison, speaking with Paula Phelps, director of ISU's Physician Assistant Program and a certified lifestyle medicine professional. We're going to take a quick break and be back with more House Call after this.
Listen to KISU live on your Google or Amazon smart speaker with the command, play KISU. You are listening to the KISU original program, House Call. Phone calls will not be taken today.
Welcome back to House Call. I'm your guest host, CJ Morrison, speaking with the director of ISU's Physician Assistant Program, Paula Phelps. We're talking about lifestyle medicine. So Paula, you've brought some information with you that I find scary. Quite. We have some information from the leading causes of death from about 10 years ago. Heart disease, cancer, respiratory disease, stroke. I feel like I am the poster child. Both sides of my family have history of all of those. It's a little different than the actual causes of death 10 years prior to that. How have things changed from 2000 to 2008 to now 2019?
What the slide is trying to show is that heart disease, cancer, chronic respiratory diseases, stroke, all of those are caused by use of tobacco, poor diet, physical inactivity, and alcohol consumption. And we continue 10 years later to see heart disease leading death in America, and that obesity is the basis of it, unfortunately, and that is only continuing to grow. And so 80% of what's actually killing us is lifestyle. And so that's where we go back to the six pillars of lifestyle medicine, and the first looking at nutrition. But the other things are important too. Sometimes stress in people's lives is so much that they can't deal with reorganizing their family's eating style until they actually deal with the nutrition. Or maybe one of the things that really needs to be addressed first is having healthy relationships. And so six pillars of health really is for people to consider what's best for them right now. Maybe what's obtainable is to work on stress. For somebody else, maybe it's, hey, I could actually take a walk each day. And for me, I want to meet my patients where they are. I want to talk to them about what's going on in their lives and find out how I can best work with them so that they can be the healthiest they can be. And it doesn't mean tackling all six things at once. It's, you know, what makes the most sense for that person.
Yeah, that would be overwhelming. I think that would add to my stress level.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. Absolutely. So there have been many studies over the last 20 years that look at how when we do address all six pillars, we can drastically change blood pressure. We can change diabetes. Some people are actually even able to get off of their medications. And so it's really important. Eating well can, though might be more expensive for some of the things, getting off of some of those costly medications could be a lot better. Insulin is super expensive. All of these things are super expensive. And as people get less and less healthy, their quality of life isn't as good. So one of the things I love to think about is a concept called the blue zones. And those are the areas in the world where people are, in general, are living to be 100 years of age and older. And if you look at what's helping people to live longer in those, we'll call them extreme ages, I'm only 55, they're over 100, I see that as extreme. They're looking at more things that are sort of like these six pillars of health. But one of the things is that they're physically active. They don't go to gyms, but they live a lifestyle where they may be walking more or they may be working in the field or whatever it is. But physical activity, they mostly eat plants. There's not a lot of meat consumption. If there is, it's usually a very low, low-fat, lean meat. The Mediterranean, people always talk about the Mediterranean diet, and that's typically a vegetable-based diet with a little bit of fish or lean chicken a few times a month. One person they interviewed who was over 100 asked if she ate much meat in her life. She was in Italy and when she was a child, and she laughed and she goes, "I think we had it once at a wedding."
Oh, wow.
And so anyways, but the other components of their life that really make a difference is that they have purpose, that they know and are engaged in their community. I like to call that finding your tribe and being with a caring group of people who surrounds you, family and community. In general, they have the 80% rule. Eat until you're 80% full and nothing after usually sundown. So Thanksgiving is our traditional holiday in America where we eat more than 80% full.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe thinking about it between Thanksgiving and New Year's is a time when we're often eating, snacking. There's always food trays around it mm-hmm. at our offices, and thinking about how can we maybe eat three meals a day and maintain our weight and more healthfully during this next month. Typically, people put on about 5 pounds. And so when I see people after the holidays and they've maintained their weight and they're disappointed and say, "But I didn't lose anything," I say, "Oh my gosh, this is amazing. You did great."
You mentioned three meals a day, and I am a person that has never eaten breakfast. Is breakfast the most important meal of the day?
I'm going to say that that's a myth, and it's not the most important meal. There's really some very interesting data coming out right now about what's called intermittent fasting. There are three ways that are supported by the literature. One is to fast every other day, which is about 500 calories on the days that you fast, not a complete fast. Another way to do it is fasting 500 calories 2 days a week. And the third way to do intermittent fasting is actually the way that I prefer to do it, is to fast for 16 hours and break your fast at about 10 a.m. and then eat until 6 p.m. and then not eat after 6 p.m. And as a, I will call myself a mature woman, but as a 55-year-old woman, and many of us are fighting waistline, as soon as I did that, and that was about in August of this year, I'm no longer fighting my weight. I'm able to maintain a very healthy weight. And so you asked about breakfast, and I will say it really depends on the person. I know some people who that they really need it for whatever reason, and other people that it makes more sense to eat from 10 to 6 every day and maintain a healthy weight.
Jennifer Aniston does that. That's why you both look so good in your 50s.
I think she might look a little bit better, and thank you.
Before we took the break, we talked a lot about plant-based diets. So a lot we hear about vegetarian and vegan diets is that it's not just about being kind to animals, but it's about being kind to the entire planet.
Yes, that's correct. I was surprised to learn the amount of greenhouse gases that can be diminished by vegetarian diets. And one estimate was that if American diets moved away from beef, that we would meet the Paris Accord in 1 year.
Wow.
Yes. Now, of course, that's not going to happen. We are not all going to give up eating red meat in 1 year. But There was another study that I looked at, and it was in a global modeling study. So they looked at 150 countries, and then they did some mathematical calculations. And they looked at nutrient levels, diet-related and weight-related chronic disease mortality, so what we were talking about before, and also environmental impacts. And they found that by eating vegetarian and vegan, not only did we decrease premature mortality by 20%, but we also markedly reduced environmental impacts on a global basis by 50 to 87%. So again, moving towards a way to sustain the earth, there's so much talk right now about greenhouse effects and emissions, and how can we not kill off the earth? That's really a question. And all of us, my children, your children, are scared about it. What planet are we leaving to our kids? And considering changing our diets will actually have a positive impact on the earth as well.
We have a lot of dairy farmers and cattle ranchers in Idaho.
We do have a lot of cattle ranchers in Idaho.
What should they do? Switch over to farming? Maybe build greenhouses?
I don't know. And that's an interesting question. I imagine I'll get a call from the beef industry, the dairy industry as well. I don't have a solution for that. It's a huge impact. Looking at Brazil and the rainforest and how much rainforest is being chopped away and burned away so that there can be more beef harvested, it's really taking its toll on our planet. And as a clinician, I don't have a solution for what to do in that regard. But I also know that in another 25 to 50 years, if we don't turn things around, that we're going to have different problems than what are our cattle ranchers going to do.
We just have another minute, Paula. So do you have any final words of wisdom about lifestyle medicine?
I just wanted to go over the general guidelines for healthy living. And in general, there's six things. Eat plants, keep moving, sleep well, be present, which basically means don't numb yourself with alcohol or some other substance. Stay calm and love people. Those are the basic guidelines. And we talk about nutrition. It's eat food, not too much, mostly plants. Physical activity is 150 minutes of moderate exercise per week. Sleep 6 to 9 hours per night. Avoid risky substances. Manage your stress and maintain healthy relationships, and most of all, find your tribe. So anyways, I hope everyone has a super happy Thanksgiving and holidays, and thank you so much for having me here.
Thank you for coming in, Paula. It's been very informative.
Thank you.
Doctor, my eyes, tell me what is wrong. Was I unwise to leave them open for so long?
You've been listening to House Call, recorded November 12th with guest host C.J. Morrison, speaking with director of Idaho State University's Physician Assistant Program, Paula Phelps. Next week, Thursday at 8:30 a.m., join Dr. Glenn Thackeray for a discussion about the Bonneville flood on Nature of Idaho. House Call returns in 2 weeks on KISU-FM.